Vedic rituals once he becomes a sannyasi. So he is called a Niragni. Agni here stands for what? Vedic ritual. Agni means Vedic ritual because they involve all Agni. All Vedic rituals involve Agni. So daily avpasana, Agni hotram, he gives a path. So Niragnihi means Nirgataha Agnihi. Vaidika karma is ma saha Niragnihi. So Niragnihi na. That Niragni who has renounced all actions and taken to sannyasa ashrama, he is not a true sannyasa. Krishna wants to make some big allegation here. Saha sannyasi karma yogi eva sannyasi. The one who is a karma yogi alone is a sannyasi, not that who became a sannyasi after giving away the agni. So if that person is not a karma yogi, just by changing his dress, he doesn't become a true sannyasi. A karma yogi, he becomes a sannyasi. That's what Krishna says. So pravritti margastaha eva sannyasi natu nivritti margastaha. He says the one who is in sannyasa ashrama, he is a nivritti margastaha. He left everything. He is not sannyasi. But the one who is in pravritti marga, like a grahastha, who is in day-to-day life, that person, he becomes a sannyasi if he is a karma yogi. But Shankaracharya in his commentary immediately he says, this is, don't just get fooled away by the statement. This is only a praise. It's just only to praise. Do not take it seriously, because to encourage people to follow karma yoga, Krishna says. Not because he wants to put down the sannyasa ashramis, the one who was really sannyasis, right? In Upanishad, sannyasa ashrama is praised so much, right? In Gita, grahastha ashrama is praised. In Upanishad, sannyasa ashrama is praised so much. So all ashramas have their own glory. Sometimes to praise one ashrama, they may put down the other. This is called a nindastuti. I already told. So the nindastuti, just to praise one, you praise the other. Then all the persons like. And so when you look at a sannyasi, we should not disregard that person, because Krishna told grahastha only is supreme. Don't disregard real sannyasis. They are great. But here in this context, especially for Arjuna, he doesn't want him to take offer ropes and sit in a corner and meditate. He wants him to fight the war. So for that, he tells him that if you are a karma yogi, you are yourself so superior. So Krishna praises the grahastha ashrami as a true sannyasi in this context. So, saha sannyasi na niragni. Okay. And not only that, saha yogi. Here yogi means a meditator. The person who is a meditator. So, that karma yogi alone is a meditator. Krishna says, the karma yogi only is a sannyasi. And that karma yogi only is a meditator. Nacha akriyaha. Not the one who is quiet, sitting in a corner with closed eyes. He is not a yogi. So this other ashrama sannyasi may sit in a corner without doing any work, no agni karyam and all that. He may close his eyes, he may meditate. He is not a true meditator, whereas this person only is a meditator. Krishna wants to make that statement also. So who is this person? An active grahastha who is engaged in all day-to-day problems of life, and a karma yogi grahastha, he is a true meditator. That's what Krishna says. So not a person who sits quiet. Then what will be the question? How can we say a karma yogi, a grahastha, a meditator? This person will have no time to meditate. All the time he is running around here and there to pay the bills only. He has no time to meditate. How can this person can be a meditator? He does not sit quiet at all any time. Right? He doesn't sit quiet. He cannot even close his eyes. Even sleep even doesn't come. He is this pill and that pill, because all this something other than that in the head. How can we call this person a meditator? Right? How Krishna calls him a meditator, he calls him a yogi. How can you call that? Because when karma yogi does action, even though he does varieties of action, so many actions he does, what is his goal? He may do so many actions. What is his goal? His goal is only moksha. So in and through all his actions, that thought alone prevails. He may be doing so many actions over that, but whatever he is doing, basically he is driven by, I am doing this as a sense of my duty. This is not the end in itself. My goal is moksha only. That is what this person knows 24 hours of the day. So when that person does that way, then what he wants? I want chitta shuddhi. I do these actions
Ultimately, I have to get Chitta Shuddhi. I want to get Jnana. I want to get Moksha. That alone is his instruction. Not all these actions, not the results of these actions. That's what he has. So, that is his final destination, namely Moksha, in which he is absorbed all the time. Even though he is a Grahastha, he is absorbed only in the destination all the time. Even though his physical body is involved in varieties of activity. So that's what he told earlier. Yavasayatmika buddhihi ekeha kurunandanam bahusatahinantascham buddhayo yavasayina. Krishna told earlier in the second chapter, a karmi's mind will wander. A karma yogi's mind will never wander. Karmi's mind will always wander. He will think of money, he will think of, some other time he may think of something else, his family, wife, children. He may be thinking about all those things only as a karmi. But as a karma yogi, he will do the duties towards all of them. But his thinking is going to be always something else. Moksha and also jnana, all those things. So a karma yogi, even though he is involved in all of these activities, his primary concern is atma jnana only. Moksha only. So adhyatma chetaha. This is also we have seen earlier. So since karma yogi has got only one thing primarily in his mind, he is as good as a meditator. That is why Krishna calls him meditator. So even though he is involved in so many actions, in and through all the actions, what is fundamentally there in his mind is the goal, the destination, moksha. So he is as good as a meditator. What a meditator does, he tries to focus all his thoughts towards only one thing. And this person, amidst all actions also, he is focusing his mind towards that one thing, namely moksha. So he is as good as a meditator. A meditation means what? Concentration. That's what he is doing. So Krishna is only glorifying here him, Grahastha. He is not just only saying, he is the greatest. He glorifies him because he wants to make sure that Arjuna doesn't run away from the battle. Okay. So he, the sins also say, don't just sit and meditate. Karma yoga is enough. That is not the problem here. Here the idea is, karma yoga itself is as good as sannyasa. When somebody practices karma yoga, that is as good as sannyasa. Karma yoga itself is as good as meditation. That's what he says. It will give you chitta shuddhi as good as meditation. So they form an ideal ground. Karma yoga forms an ideal ground for later Vedanta vichara. Now it is preparatory. It prepares this person so that mind will be pure. Mind will be without any oscillation. So when Vedanta shravanam comes at that time, mind will be prepared to receive the message of Jnana Marga Veda. So karma yoga alone is a sannyasi, karma yogi alone, not an akar-robed monk. And karma yogi alone is a meditator, not the one who is sitting quiet. See, these are two things, messages from this shloka. Therefore, Arjuna, do karma yoga as a preparation for jnana, for meditation. Now, what will be the question? How can you call a karma yogi a monk? That is the next. How you can call a karma yogi a meditator? Now, how can you call a karma yogi a monk? How can a grahastha be called a sannyasi? So, what is the very definition of sannyasa? Sannyasa means the one who has given up, one who has renounced. This is sannyasa. Here, grahastha has not given up anything. He is in the middle of all family activities. All activities, he is in the middle of all of them. He has not given up anything. Then, how can a grahastha, who keeps his wife, his children, his home, his bank balance, all those things, how that person can be called a monk, a sannyasi? Then we will think it looks like illogical, right? So Krishna has to show now how the grahastha can be called a sannyasi, which he does it in the next shloka.
Yam sannyasamiti prahuho.
Yam sannyasamiti prahuho. Yam sannyasamiti prahuho.
Yogam tam viddhi pandava.
Yogam tam viddhi pandava. Yogam tam viddhi pandava.
Yam sannyasamiti prahuho. Yogam tam viddhi pandava.
Yam sannyasamiti prahuho. Yogam tam viddhi pandava. Yam sannyasamiti prahuho. Yogam tam viddhi pandava.
Nahya sanyasta sankalpaha.
Nahya sanyasta sankalpaha. నభ్యసన్యస్తసంకల్పః
యోగీ భవతి కశ్చన
యోగీ భవతి కశ్చన నభ్యసన్యస్తసంకల్పో యోగీ భవతి కశ్చన నభ్యసన్యస్తసంకల్పో యోగీ భవతి కశ్చన.
సో కృష్ణ సేస్ హియర్ సన్యాస అండ్ యోగా కర్మ యోగ ఆఫ్ అ గృహస్థ, దట్స్ ఎ యోగ, ఆర్ వన్ అండ్ ద సేమ్. దట్స్ వాట్ హీస్ టెల్లింగ్ హియర్. సన్యాస అండ్ యోగ, కర్మ యోగ ఆర్ వన్ అండ్ ద సేమ్. యం సన్యాసం ప్రాహుః, వాట్ పీపుల్ కాల్ యాజ్ సన్యాస ఆర్ రెనన్సియేషన్, యం సన్యాసం ప్రాహుః తం యోగం విద్ధి, దట్ ఈస్ నథింగ్ బట్ ద ప్రాక్టీస్ ఆఫ్ కర్మ యోగ అలోన్. యు అండర్స్టాండ్ that what people call sannyasa or renunciation is nothing but practice of karma yoga alone. What it does. So Krishna is consciously suppressing the idea of renunciation. You don't have to renounce, be a karma yoga, be a grahastha. And if you follow karma yoga, that is as good as renunciation, as good as sannyasa ashram. So these are all said for Arjuna's sake, we should understand. So there is something called sannyasa, which means giving up of everything and secluding oneself from society. Go to some paras, sit in some dharmika, some place. That is sannyasa. Such a sannyasa is there, but Krishna does not want to expose Arjuna to this sannyasa. He doesn't want to even tell sannyasa such a thing exists. He wants to keep away from that. So he is suppressing that sannyasa, the external renunciation, ashrava sannyasa, and what he does not want to even mention it here, that is why he is saying that karma yoga way of life is sannyasa. Without even mentioning the other sannyasa, he says karma yoga way of life itself is sannyasa. So karma yogi grahastha is a sannyasi. That's what he is. Grahastha who is a karma yogi is a sannyasi. On what basis? Krishna has to prove it. Because the word sannyasa means what? Renunciation. To give up. That is sannyasa. And a karma yogi grahastha renounces what? It doesn't seem to renounce anything at all. But what does he renounce? Krishna gives the answer actually in the second line of the shloka. He says, karma yogi is sanyasta sankalpa. That's what it says in the second shloka. Nahya sanyasta sankalpa, right? So he is a sanyasta sankalpa. Karma yogi also renounces his concern for what? The results of his action. He doesn't renounce his actions, but he renounces the results, concern for the results of his actions. So karma pala sangam he renounces. The sannyasa ashrami he renounces karma. Whereas the karma yogi, what he does? He renounces the karma pala. The karma pala sangam. The association with the karma palam he renounces. Krishna calls it, so karma pala abhisandhi. That's what he renounces. So Krishna calls it sankalpa. That renunciation causes sankalpa. So karma pala sangaha means concern for the result. Concern for the result. And the karma yogi is who? Sanyasta sankalpaha. The one who has renounced this concern for the result. That's what he is sannyasi. So karma yogi is one who has renounced all his concern for the fruits of the action. And so he is called a yogi. He is the karma yogi. So what we call samma is generally a sannyasi because he renounces all his actions themselves. So a sannyasi renounces all actions themselves, and a grahastha, a karma yogi here, renounces all his concerns for the actions. The other one doesn't do any action at all. This person does action, but he renounces the concern for all his actions. So he is as good as a sannyasi. So one renounces karma itself and the other one renounces the karma pala asakti. Karma pala asakti. So renunciation is common for both. For sannyasi also and this karma yogi, they are common for both. A sannyasi renounces karma and so he is sama. When he renounces karma, he is sama. Right? He is calm, tranquil, no action. When there is no action, what is that be worried about? So he is very calm. And the karma yogi renounces his worry about the results of the action, so he is also calm and tranquil. So both are same. So they both. So in fact, whenever we have a mental agitation, we can always say the agitation is never because of karma itself. Is it so? Whenever we have an agitation, is the agitation due to karma or for something else? Due to something else. It is never because of the karma. All agitation is because of the karma phala. Whatever was the result, how it has affected me. Karma itself has no, by itself nothing, right? No, it's not because of karma at all. It is because of the results of the karma, how I deal with it. How I reflect upon it. How I think it affects me. That is only agitation comes. Not because of the karma itself. Okay. So that's what we say. So whenever our interest is not involved, whenever interest is not involved, when we are doing karma for someone else, for the neighbor, right? Advertising for someone, whatever it is, we are very calm. Problem is neighbors, not money. I can be very liberal advising, telling him this, that. I can do all that because I am not agitated. It is his problem. Right? So that's how it is. So if we really analyze the situation, you know, we can go through all the problems he has and all that thing, gives wonderful solution, all that thing. Because the concerned part of the self does not bind me. It binds him, somebody else. So I have no problem at all. It does not cause any problem because its outcome has no direct effect on my life. When I involve alone, problems come, not otherwise. So karma itself is not a problem, but karma phala sangha is a problem. Association with the karma phala, association with the result of the action, that alone is a problem. So karma yogi renounces karma phala sangha. Karma phala sangha he renounces, the karma yogi. So he is as good as a sannyasi. That's what Krishna says. That is what I said here. Nahi asanyasta sankalpaha yogi bhavati kaschana. Actually, Krishna is putting here a negative, he uses double negative here. What he wants to say is what? Karma yogi is one who has renounced the sankalpa, the association for the fruit of his action, or concern for the result. So he has to say what? The one who has renounced the concern for the result is a sannyasi. That's what he should say. The one who has renounced the concern for his self is a karma yogi and he is a sannyasi, that's what he has to say. But what he says is, one who has not renounced the concern for the result is not a karma yogi. Instead of saying one who has renounced the result of the action is a karma yogi, he says, one who has not renounced the associated result of the action is not a karma yogi. He puts it as double negative. And double negative generally is chosen in all places like this. Is because they want to emphasize. So emphasis is the reason. So by putting in this way, Krishna is emphasizing that one of the main criteria for karma yogi is not worrying about the outcome of any action. Whatever action you do the action as a sense of duty, do not be concerned about what the result of that action is. So both are sannyasi one is karma phala sangha sannyasi, and the other one is karma sannyasi. So both are sannyasi only. And Krishna does not say even that both are equal sannyasi. He doesn't say any of those. He only says grahastha alone is a true sannyasi. He doesn't even say both are equal sannyasi. He says he is only a true sannyasi. The other is not. And that is the extent Krishna wants to emphasize to Arjuna. Be a grahastha. Be a karma yogi. Go, be in the war and do your duty. Such a human. So he's trying to tell.
Aru Rukshor Munir Yogam.
Karma Karanam Uchyate.
Yoga Rudasya Tasyaiva. Shamakaranam Uchyate.
Yoga Rudasya Tasyaiva. Shamakaranam Uchyate.
Yoga Rudasya Tasyaiva. Shamakaranam Uchyate.
Small diversion. The way of writing that is separate from the previous sloka using the double negative is known by a beautiful figure of speech in Sanskrit language that is called apaknutihi. It's a way of communicating, like a simile, right? It's a figure of speech. That is, the virtue is in one plane, it's covered to show the very same virtue in some other plane. It's a way of describing it here. See, for example, they give normally some example like that. Nayam sugamshu kim tarhi sugamshu prayasi mukha. So you have to give this as an example. So one man, a person, is that he likes his wife so much. Right? He likes his so much. And he says, to please her, he says, he was describing actually the beauty of her face, how beautiful she is, he wants to describe. And the way we are telling is, who said the moon is there? There is no moon at all. Or that is not the moon at all. So he's telling his wife. Who said, no, the moon is there, there is no moon at all. The moon is not there at all. Then what is the moon? The moon is your face. That's what he wants to tell. He's saying it, you know, he likes his wife so much. He wants to tell her, the moon is your face. So instead of saying that, he says there is no moon at all. Who says there is moon there? It is not there at all. So moon is here. Then can we literally take that her face is moon? Right? So then her head must be going around, right? Like moon. So what is the idea here? Idea is not to literally say that there is not moon. The whole idea is that her face is so beautiful as moon. That's all we have to take. So the beauty of moon is covered and then is superimposed on something else, namely her beauty. Right? That is the figure of this. Yeah? So it is called apakmuti alankara in Sanskrit. Okay. So when you get a nice coffee, normally coffee we can understand. When you get a nice coffee, what do you say? Amritam is not in heaven. Amritam is not in heaven. Amritam is here. What is the implication? You want to deny the amritatvam there, and that sweetness, taste, etc., you want to now attribute to whatever is here in front of you. Right? That's what we want to do. So, to superimpose amritatvam. So, similarly, a sannyasi is a sannyasi, a grahastha is a grahastha. There is no difference in that, right? A sannyasi is a sannyasi, grahastha is a grahastha only. So, a grahastha cannot be a sannyasi, and a sannyasi cannot be a grahastha also. They are there, they are there. But to emphasize, people make all these things. So, Krishna wants to glorify a grahastha. So, he takes the sannyasi status from a sannyasi and says that is not a sannyasi at all. As you say, amritam is not there, it's here. He takes it that way. On the other hand, this grahastha alone is a sannyasi. That's what he wants to emphasize. So, this is called apaknuti alankara. Okay. A small division. So, actually there are even subdivisions in this, on this apaknuti also. That is, what is said actually in the second shloka. Here what he says is, how long one should continue karma yoga? That is the next question. How long one should continue karma yoga? Karma yoga is a bahiranga sadhana. We already told in the beginning, because we have to fit into one of those four, right? So, karma yoga is a bahiranga sadhana, and the sadhana can never be permanently continued. Any sadhana. If you are doing a sadhana, that sadhana can never be permanently continued. Once the result comes, you kick away the sadhana, right? Once you get the desired result, you need the sadhana anymore. You don't need it anymore. Right? So, the purpose of sadhana itself will be gone. So, for example, driving to come up to this class, it's a sadhana. How long is a sadhana? As long as it takes for you to come here. Once you come here, no more driving is involved. Right? It's gone. So, it is not there anymore. So, karma yoga also is a bahiranga sadhana. And how long it should be performed? Krishna says, yogam arurukshu karma karanam uchyate. Karma, here means karma yoga, is only a sadhana, munehe. Munehe is for a seeker, who is yogam arurukshu, who wants to get fitness for meditation. Yogam arurukshu, for anybody who wants to get the fitness for meditation. So, karma yoga is only a sadhana for one who wants to get the fitness for meditation as the qualification, the readiness for meditation. Meditation is vidyasana, right? So, to get a contemplative mind, to get a quiet mind, so karma yoga becomes a sadhana till you get there. Once you get there, you don't need to have any more karma yoga, because you already got tranquility of mind. So, karma yoga becomes a sadhana till you. So, once a person has got a contemplative mind, then on, karma yoga has no validity for this person at all. There is no use for that at all, no purpose. So it is like, just if food has value, only I am, my stomach is empty. When the stomach is full, It may be the greatest tasty food. Does it matter anything to me at all? Nothing, because my stomach is full. I have no concern for the food at all. So, the value, similarly, karma yoga also loses its value. Then something else gets the value. Vidyasana gets the value, karma yoga loses value. So, for example, one somebody passes the 6th standard. 6th standard has no more value anymore. 7th standard has value. Once you pass 7th, that has no more value. 8th only has value. Okay? It's only cross that. So, there is not, so there's nothing like a permanently valuable sadhana. Okay. So, once a person has got a contemplative mind, it is not an active life that he needs, but a quieter life, a withdrawn life is what he needs. Once the mind becomes calm, he doesn't want any more active life. He wants only a quieter life. He wants a tranquil life, a withdrawn life. And that is what is said here. Tasyaiva yoga rudasya. To that same person who has attained the contemplative mind, who has claimed the ladder of meditation, yogam here means the fitness for meditation, that is yoga. And arudaha means who has risen to the standard of meditation, to the portals of meditation, and then on, what is the means for him? No more active life for that person. He has got purity, he has got chitta shuddhi, he has to only pursue jnana marga. So active life is no more needed for him. Shamaha karanam uchyate. Quietitude. Shamaha. Withdrawal. Then one can ask, should he then renounce his duty? He is a grahastha now. He has got quietness of mind. He has got that. He is a karma yogi. Then can he renounce his duties? Yes, still he is a grahastha. Right? If you are in duty, you are in action. Duty means action. You have to do some action or the other. So, of course, if he wants to renounce his duty, he can take sannyasa. But he cannot be still living in grihastha ashrama. If he wants to be in grihastha ashrama, he can become a karma yogi, but he cannot get rid of his duties. If he wants to get rid of his duties and action, he should then take to sannyasa ashrama at that stage. He cannot still call himself as the grihastha ashrami anymore. Okay? So, he can have a passive life of contemplation. That option is given by the scriptures. Scriptures say, okay, you can take to sannyasa ashrama, no problem. You can do that. But as long as the person continues to be a grihastha, he cannot renounce his duty completely anytime. He cannot renounce duties at all. Then it will be violating the ashrama dharma. He will be violating the ashrama dharma of the grihastha ashrama. If he does not want grihastha ashrama, then he should not continue as a grihastha. He should get out. He should become a sannyasi, he should get out. But if you want to remain in grihastha ashrama, then one has no right to give up the duties of grihastha ashrama. That always have to be done. But he can do one thing, he can curtail them. He cannot give them up, but he can curtail them. He can reduce the involvement. He can do that much. For example, he can reduce, you know, all other duties and keep the bare minimum duty of a grihastha. Whatever is minimum required to conduct his family life. He can have only that much. That should be no problem. And the time that he saves, for example, he was doing puja for 3 hours all those days. Every day, you know, Ekadashi Rudram, all that thing, all those abhishek in 3-4 hours. He can do it in 10 minutes today. That's enough. But he cannot give that up. That's a duty he has to still perform. But then he can minimize, but he cannot minimize it and then watch before the TV. You can minimize it and spend that time in contemplation. Spend the time in Nididhyasa. You can do that thing, no problem. But you cannot say, I can minimize my puja and then go sit, watch some other whatever. You cannot do all that. Right? So, the time he saves, minimizing the puja, visiting faraway temples and all those things, all those physical jobs he can minimize, and in that time, he can do Vedanta Vichara. He can do inquiry into Vedanta, he can do meditation, all those things can be done. In fact, actually, that is a better, higher, nobler puja than doing the physical puja. Sitting for 3 hours and doing all these abhishekams and all the time mind is wandering somewhere else. You know, I told you that joke, right? Somebody came and knocked at the door and asked, where is the master of the house? Servant opened the door. He said, oh, he is right now. He is in that mall or some water shop he is. He said, what? He is doing puja here. You are saying he is in that mall. He is doing puja, that's right. Even the servant knows. So that is the extent of his puja. So that puja is no puja at all. So you do 10 minutes, that's fine. But 10 minutes be a good 10 minutes. Involve only in that activity. That's right. So if he is in Grahastha Ashrama, he cannot stop the karma anytime. He has to do the karma, like Sandhyamana karma, all those Vigita karmas. He has to do all of them. But he can reduce the time of involvement, how much he wants to spend on time. So that is what is called, said here, shamaha, withdraw, quietitude. That's what he does. He can make his activity as less as possible. So there are two stages of life, karma yoga, and do follow karma yoga and get a contemplative mind, a mind that is prepared. And then take to jnana yoga or dhyana yoga and attain liberation. These are the two stages. First to purify the mind and go to jnana yoga and seek moksha. Active mind and the quiet life. This is what all this respect. So active life for preparation and quiet life for self-knowledge. This is, actually the steps are very clear and crisp. There is no gray area at all. It is all very discreet, very nice steps. So these are the two stages of life which Krishna has been prescribing and which is emphasized here. And we go to the next sloka. यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु
यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु
न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते
न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते
यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते
यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु न कर्मस्वनुषज्यते सर्वसंकल्पसन्न्यासी सर्वसंकल्पसन्न्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते योगारूढस्तदोच्यते
सर्वसंकल्पसन्न्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते
सर्वसंकल्पसन्न्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते सर्वसंकल्पसन्न्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते
That is very nice to hear, but how do I know that I am not a contemplative mind fit for meditation? Because who prescribes that? Who tells me, yes, you have got contemplative mind, you are ready for jnana yoga right now? Who will tell me that? How do I know that I got a contemplative mind? So whether I am fit for meditation or not, how do I know? How to know that? Krishna says that the contemplative mind and the vairagyam, they both are similar. Contemplative mind is vairagyam. The more there is vairagyam, the more contemplation can take place. So, it is not that one has to develop a contemplative mind directly, one can develop vairagyam. So, the more vairagyam you have, more contemplative you can become. So, Krishna tries to put it that way. So, on the other hand, the more raga or the attachment, more desires they are there, then more the mind will be extra. Be more extrovert and so less and less contemplative because it is more attached to all the external things in life. So it will be less and less contemplative. It's a very, very simple logic. So when I have too many things to get, when I close my eyes, what comes? Only all those things come. I want to get this, I want to get that, all that thing, they are all there in the mind. So when I sit on meditation, only those things come into the mind, not the real meditative. So this stimulus comes to the mind. So I have to do this, I have to do that. Always they are in the mind. So when the mind has desires, it will be extrovert always. It will be agitated. It will come across us. It will be always agitated mind. Always reaction will be there. They are all inevitable. It will always be there. You can try to suppress them, but it will erupt elsewhere. You cannot completely get rid of them. So desire, anger, jealousy, reaction, irritation, anxiety, go together. You cannot get rid of them that easily. On the other hand, when a person has vairagyam, vairagyam is what? Detachment, dispassion. When a person has vairagyam, lack of anxiety, calmness, withdrawal, quietude, all those things, they will go together for that person because he has disinterest. He has no problem. But dispassionate, he has vairagyam, he has detachment. So the gauge for contemplative mind is vairagyam. How much vairagyam I have? If I have good vairagyam, I have a contemplative mind. If I don't have, I don't have contemplative mind at all. I can do whatever I want to do, but nothing will stay into that mind. So he says, yada na anushajyate. In what terms? So in various types of activities, for what purpose? Indriya arteshu. Meant for acquiring all sense objects. Indriya arteshu means sense objects. All indriya arteshu means acquiring all sense objects. So when the mind does not plan to go here and there, does not oscillate, to meet this person or that person, to do this job or that job, to go to this shop or that shop. So, and for all for the fulfillment of what? For various indriyartas. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to go this shop, that shop, for what? To fill indriyartas. Whatever my desires are, whatever to satisfy my indriyas. So, yes, this person has a permanently shopping mind. Always shopping. Not real shopping, window shopping. Some shopping. Always. Or web shopping. You know, we've got all kinds of shopping. Amazon shopping, eBay shopping. All shoppings are there, right? So, either it is physically or mentally, this mind is shopping. But always, nature is like that. Or mentally planning to shop. Not really shopping, mentally planning to shop also. So, it's not just a problem for only ladies. Understand that. Sorry. Don't think shopping is only ladies. This thing. Everybody does that. So, problem for everyone. So, a wanting mind will permanently keep shopping. A mind that requires this and that always will be shopping for something or the other. At the same time, I don't say without shopping you can survive also. You have to understand that. You have to shop. Without shopping, you can survive, right? You have to always shop to make the best of whatever is available. So, because the very living involves shopping, right? Without that, you cannot live. You require things to live, basic things. Obviously. So, what we really mean is, more than necessary, we don't have to shop. Whatever is necessary, we always have to shop, we have to find that, we have to get that. But more than what is necessary, we don't have to unnecessarily spend our time and effort to do those shopping at all. So, in the case of a karma yogi or a mature person, he will make it as less as possible. A karma yogi or a mature person, he makes this effort as less as possible, whereas the other person will try to make it as more as possible. For him, that is the pastime. That is the only pastime. Shopping is his pastime. What else you are doing? Get up in the morning, they do mall walk. After the mall walk, then they go shopping. Whereas the other person, he will try to make it as more as possible. Therefore, na karma su anushajyate. When the mind does not get attached to these petty things, or these what are small things here and there, and therefore, sarva sankalpa sannyasi, the one who has renounced the sankalpa. Sankalpa means what? Repeatedly thinking about the same thing. I want to get this, I want to get this, I want to get this. After sometimes this becomes infatuation, right? I want to get, without that I cannot sleep. Without that there is no life. It goes to all that stage, right? First, oh, it is nice to see. You go window shopping, you go, oh, it's a nice thing to see, very nice. And oh, I like it, next stage, and I should have it. Without that, there is no life. If that doesn't come to my mind, even, I can even commit suicide. You know, I'm not joking. There was some OC visa. You remember there was an OC visa, the group of some seniors, yes, who came to India a long time ago. And they were singing, you know, there were some group of singers, Western singers, and whatever, rock or jazz and whatever it is. So, and there was this kid who really wanted to go to the show. And the tickets were all very high tickets. Ordinary middle class family cannot afford it. And this girl wants to go, and there's a lot of peer pressure. That girl. So comes and asks the parents. Parents say, no, we cannot go for all that thing. So now, you know how Indian parents say. This girl, she without going for that, there was no life for them. She broke, you know, in India we got all these coke kind of these drinks in glass bottles. She broke one glass bottle and cut herself with that because she's not able to go to that show. That is the extent of infatuation. So it looks pathetic, but what can you do? That is how mind works like that sometimes. So how you need to have control of the mind? It can take you in any direction unless we are in God. So this is how people can quote that extent. So repetition of thinking, it indicates our interest. How often you think, tells how interested I am in that. Otherwise, why I don't care otherwise, right? The more interested, think more. So, in the case of a contemplative person, those petty things do not occupy his mind at all. All this, there is no room in his mind for all these petty things for this contemplative person. For some other questions is different. For him, it's not. So the substance of spiritual thoughts and matters of that nature only will be appealing to him. For him, all these petty things won't appear, but he thinks about, you know, some philosophy all the time, spiritual thoughts, some good thoughts, association with good people. He thinks about all that only all the time. So whereas such type of thoughts occupy the least amount of time in the case of an immature person who doesn't have a concentrated. So we can observe our mind, which thoughts in our mind lingers more often. Nobody needs to know. We can ask ourselves what lingers, comes across in our mind most of the time. That tells what contemplative mind I have. Right? I can gauge myself. Nobody can gauge me. I can only gauge myself. How often, what kind of thoughts come in. So if they are not good thoughts, clip them away. If they are good thoughts, try to promote them. So we can fan any type of thought by our own efforts, right? Whether a thought is there, who fans them? Only I fan them, right? By repeatedly thinking, I fan it. But if it's not a good thought, cut it away. If it's a good thought, you can fan it more. So that is why we have to have that ability to discriminate what is good for you, what is not good. So that's what Krishna talks about all the time. So which thoughts occupy our mind more, that shows our spiritual vision. What interests me more. But if he has to attend the social call, for example, attending a wedding, he cannot say all the time, I'm a philosopher sitting in a corner, we are doing the work, you have to attend weddings, you have to do social gatherings, you have to go. Right? You attend all of them. So during those occasions, when you talk with people, mixes with them, you feel very good, and then you try to show to them that you are very concerned or that you are very friendly. But stop it there and go home. You don't have to still sit for the gossip session that follows that. Many times that follows. Gossip sessions will be there, that record session will be there, that will be there. We don't have to participate in those. We can be as friendly and be participative, and once that is over, once you think that it takes a different direction, go home. Engaging some of the thoughts that would be rewarding to us than engaging, because gossip thoughts are more tasty, right? So they are more tasty. Gossip, and especially gossip, somebody gossip is always about somebody else, right? So any news about somebody else is more tasty. So you engage in that. When you go to gatherings, that's what many times people do. Right? We should not do that. The more we do that, they may say that you are not, they may come, you are anti-social or non-social, and whatever the term is, they may come, does it matter? How does it matter? Whatever they call you, how does it matter? Doesn't matter. So we have to be on guard about what kind of thoughts they linger in our mind. So which thoughts occupy my mind more, that shows the extent of spirituality I have. So it is the occupation of the mind which decides the maturity. In the case of a contemplative person, a mature person, sarva sankalpa sannyasi, no worldly activities occupy his mind at all. Sarva sankalpa sannyasi, no worldly things occupy his mind at all. Even though he does all of them according to his duty, he does all of them. Because it is duty, he is grahastha. See, he has to engage in all those activities. Even though he is in all those activities, they do not occupy his mind at all. He just does it as a sense of duty and forgets it then and there. He has no association with that afterwards at all. So, sarva sankalpa sannyasi, the one who has given up all the sankalpas. And remember, he is still not an external sannyasi. He is a grahastha. He is a grahastha who is a karma yogi. He is not an external sannyasi at all. Krishna is using the word sannyasi from the standpoint of what? Sarva sankalpa. He has relinquished all the other association with him. That's all. So preoccupation with his mind, if we renounce, we are as good as a sannyasi. If you are preoccupied, means what? We are thinking about something or the other. So if you leave the preoccupation, but sometimes as a grahastha, there are sense of duties. To pay the bill, you may be preoccupied. Tomorrow is the deadline, I don't have enough money, how do I pay? Right? That thing can cross the mind. But that should not be a worry. You have to only find a solution for it than keeping it as a worry and earnestly bothering about it more. Right? You know, the Umar Khayyam, what he says, let us today, and why fret about them if today be sweet? Right? That is his point. Let us today, yesterday is gone, tomorrow is unborn. Why fret about both of them if today is sweet? Right now I am fine, right? That is the attitude some people take, but we cannot do that, okay? Because we have to always prepare for tomorrow also. But at the same time, it cannot be a worry. It can be our preparation, but it cannot be the goal. So Krishna is using the word sannyasi from the standpoint of sarvasankalpa. So even if a person is a sannyasi, is a monk, a akarrobha sannyasi, he also can be a pakka materialist. Sannyasi, but he can also be a pakka materialist if most of his time he is occupied with what? With, you know, will the ashrama, you know, come up or not? He has all the worries. Will the ashrama come up at all or not? How to build it, how to expand it, how many rooms I can have, what kind of room I can have for myself. That is his akarrobha, right? But still he is material in his pursuit. And of course, he has to have certain things. But if they all go, once I took my youngest son to somewhere. And then we were sitting and all that thing. And after coming back, he's asking, Appa, is this sannyasi's room? What you can do? So people, have all these questions. So if all these things are occupying one's mind, even a sannyasi is not a sannyasi. He may be an akarrobha sannyasi for the external appearance, but he is not a sannyasi at all. So ultimately, sannyasi and the non-sannyasi, they depend on the sankalpa only. The sankalpa only, occupation of the mind. What is mostly occupying one's mind determines whether a person is a real sannyasi or not a sannyasi. So such a person, tada, at that time, when the occupation has become different, yoga arudaha uchyate. At that time, he is called yoga arudaha, a person who has accomplished a contemplative mind. So what was the original question? How do I know whether I have a contemplative mind or not? Right? Father Krishna is telling how that person, if the mind is not preoccupied with all other things, that who knows? I would know, not somebody else. I should know. Then I can consider myself yoga arudaha. Yoga arudaha, a person who has accomplished a contemplative mind, who has become fit for Vedanta. That's what we are telling. He is fit for Jnana Marga right now. Vedanta has not come yet, but he is fit to receive Vedanta knowledge. He has to do Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam to go through that path. Then non-guru prapti has to happen. He has to go to a proper guru, then Shravanam, Mananam, all those things have to happen. Then he becomes an adhikari. Now he is an adhikari right now. Then he becomes, he can go for Jnana Marga. We call this person now Sadhanan Chatushtaya Sampannaha Adhikari. Therefore, yoga arudaha can be defined as Sadhanan Chatushtaya Sampanna. Uddare Dhatmanam Atmanatmanam.
Uddare Dhatmanatmanam. Uddare Dhatmanatmanam.
Natmanam
avasadayet. Natmanam avasadayet.
Uddare
Dhatmanatmanam. Natmanam avasadayet. Uddare Dhatmanatmanam. Natmanam avasadayet.
आत्मैवह्यात्मनो बन्धुः
Atmaivahyatmano bandhu, Atmaivaripuratmanah.
So Krishna is going to point out some virtues necessary for a seeker. A person who wants to pursue this dharma, he is going to point out some virtues. And one very important virtue he highlights is self-confidence. How one should have self-confidence. Okay. Which is a very, very important thing, because even a most efficient person, the person can fail if he decides that he is unqualified. He may be a very efficient person, but if he thinks that he is not qualified, he may even fail. He may be, even though he may be very efficient. And this is one of the problems of many spiritual seekers particularly. They say, I am not fit for moksha at all. That is a common statement most people make. I am not at all fit for moksha, at least in this birth. So he is looks more Vedanta. I am not at all fit for moksha, at least in this birth. Next birth I can be. Somehow I studied Gita, Upanishads and all those things. I try my best, but I am not an extraordinary person. That is the next thing. if for somebody to study Gita and all that, he thinks he should be extraordinary person. He cannot be ordinary person to Gita. He should be extraordinary to Gita. That means what? They think that an extraordinary person alone can get this knowledge, can get moksha. They think ordinary person cannot get, extraordinary person only can get. So, I am not a Shankaracharya, I am Vivekananda to get moksha. I am an ordinary somebody, 5 litre, 8 litres, 200 pounds. So, that's what I think of moksha. Right? So, I am also studying scriptures. That's true. That's all. Yeah, scriptures are there. People say, okay, I go there. Spend some time reading them. So, even if God is going to come and he will tell that, like, no, you can also get moksha. Don't problem. I can assure you. Then he says, in fact, moksha is not even getting tattvamasi. God himself may come and tell. So, even if the Lord himself comes and says, what do you say? No. Show me your identity now. Are you really God? That is what you will ask to him, because that is the extent of our idea. So, who says like that? That's the question you'll ask them. So, I don't think I am qualified. I don't know Sanskrit. That is the next stage. I don't know Sanskrit at all. How can I get moksha? I don't know Sanskrit. Because moksha is all in Sanskrit, right? I don't even know Sanskrit. How can I get moksha? So, if you don't know Sanskrit, you don't get moksha. These are all people's perceptions. People think all those things, right? So, if Sanskrit is one of the qualifications of getting moksha, then Sarvatrishya Sambhati will include Sanskrit also, right? Viveka, Vairagya, Samadhi, Shakti Sambhati, Mumukshutvam. It should also include Sanskrit. But it did not, right? So, Sanskrit is not a prerequisite for getting moksha. So, some silly reason we give. Some reason we give to continue to be what? A samsari. We like being samsari so much. We want to give some reason or the other so that we can continue to be a samsari. Right? So, that is the most dangerous thing, because nobody can help us if we have that tendency. If we have that kind of a tendency, nobody can help us at all. So, if I have decided that I cannot get moksha, we will find that even God becomes helpless. If I have thought I cannot get moksha at all, then how can God help us? God will help those only who will help themselves. Right? I have to first think, yes, I can get it. That confidence I should develop. Right? That is why when we talk of grace, normally they talk of grace, 4 different graces. Right? When we talk of grace, they talk of 4 types. One is, we say is Ishwara Kripa is needed. Absolutely true. Right? For anything you need Ishwara Kripa, very, very much true. And Guru Kripa is needed. You need the blessing of his Guru. Because Guru is the one who teaches you right and wrong and everything. Shastra Kripa is needed, because the scriptures, they must bless me, because they only teach me Dharma. So, Shastra Kripa is needed. And 4th is what? Atma Kripa is needed. All the other things are fine. Atma Kripa, Atma refers to one's own. I have to help myself. Yet God can help me, teacher can help me, scriptures can help me. They all are no use if I don't want to help myself. How am I going to approach a person like that if I don't have that initiative and drive? So, one's own grace is nothing but a strong determination. What is my grace? My self-confidence. My determination telling that it is not impossible for me to go to moksha. I should be convinced. I should tell myself, yes, I can get moksha also. See, here moksha is not dependent on, you know, caste, creed, gender, age. No. For everybody. Moksha is for everyone. So, a person can assure himself, yes, I can also get the eligibility. I can get moksha also. To say only extraordinary only people, only people only can get moksha, then why should I not consider myself as extraordinary? Right? You don't have to say somebody is extraordinary, he can get moksha. I'm also extraordinary. I can think moksha. There's nothing, no harm in thinking. So, whether I'm extraordinary or not depends on what I think of myself. If I think I'm ordinary, I'm ordinary only. If I think I'm extraordinary, I'm extraordinary. Right? It all depends on what I think of myself, right? And after they become great only, they can be called, actually many people who are called extraordinary, they were not extraordinary before they became great. They were ordinary only and they became great and we call them extraordinary later. Right? So, not normally, you know, a great man is not because he did great things. He did even small things in a great way. So he became great. No matter what we think as small things, he did in a great way. Therefore, everything you can do in so many ways, the way this person does. So that makes him distinguishable. Right? So Krishna emphasizes here, Atma Kripa is a must. Self-confidence to help myself is a must. So whenever negative thoughts come, I decide that inferiority complex should not be there at all. I should never have, especially when you get negative thoughts. And so Krishna underlines here, Atmanam na avasadayet. He says, never look down upon yourself. Never look down upon yourself. Because always people, what they say, that you should not be arrogant. Normally people tell us, right? You should not be arrogant. You should become good. You should look yourself as small. That's what the people teach us, right? They normally tell you, you should be humble, you should not be arrogant. You always, you know, look yourself as small. Other person is great. You have to respect it. All that they teach us. But these are all humility. You have to understand that. There's a difference between humility and inferiority complex. Humility you should have. You can be humble, no problem at all. But still you should think, I am what? I am the Chaitanya. That can be there in my mind all the time. But I can be humble. I can be modest. I can have humility. But I am the Chaitanya Swarupa. That I can always have. So, in the name of removing superiority complex, I gradually glide into inferiority complex. Because they tell you, you should not be arrogant. So, I think this arrogance is not arrogance. It is owning up. I own up. I am Chaitanya. It is owning up your nature. It is not that you are arrogant. So, we have to understand the difference between them. So, in the name of not getting superiority complex, we gradually glide into inferiority complex and do it in ourselves. That's what we do many times. So, one should never feel inferior of oneself anytime. Nobody is inferior to anyone. And if I have that complex, then what should I do? Krishna says, Udaret. If you think you have that, then one should uplift oneself. You cannot expect somebody else to come with a crane and lift you up. You have to lift yourself up. Keep your spirits up. You know they say? Keep your spirits up. You have to lift yourself. Because nobody can uplift me. They can give some nice words. It will be interesting. It will be nice to hear. But you will become dependent on that afterwards. Unless somebody comes and praises you or says nice things to you, you will feel that you are no Buddha. You are Buddha all the time. But we have to have the confidence about ourselves. Because there are certain things for which someone else can help. But all other things cannot be helped by them. Especially in your own self-confidence. Actually, Adi Shankaracharya, in Viveka Chudamani, he gives us nice example. Matta kanyasta bharadeti dukkam anye nivaryate shudadi krita dukkam vina svena na kenachite. That's why he gives an example here. When someone got a very, very heavy load on his head, very bar, big bar he has got, load on his head. What somebody can do, he can take the load off his head. He can help him. Actually, in our place, villages and all, you will see stone like this on the road, so that he can park his weight on that thing for 1-2 minutes and take it back. So somebody else can take the load out of your head for some time. Like a son, for example, from the father or anybody else, he can take away his load for some time. But Shudadi krita dukkam tu. If that dukkam or that difficulty has come because of hunger, if it has come out of carrying a load, somebody can take it. But if that problem has come because I am very hungry, then can the son tell father, father, you are very hungry, I will eat for you? He can never do that, right? Only father has to eat, then only he can get his hunger rectified. So this is one such. There are many such occasions where you can get the help from others. But when it comes to self-confidence, we have to be convinced that we are no inferior to anyone. That we have to have. That conviction we have to have. That faith we have to have in ourselves. We don't have to have the faith on somebody else. We have to have the faith in ourselves. Yes, I can do it. I am also just like anybody else. I can be qualified. So that knowledge we should have, that belief we should have. So, for certain problems, proxy solutions can be there, but for certain others, there is no proxy solution at all. It should be this one such. So samsara is one such problem for which there is no proxy solution at all. I cannot give my problem of samsara to somebody else. It is my problem, it is my samsara, I have to deal with it. So samsara is one such problem. Always guru can always say, right, oh, you are my sishya. No problem, your samsara I will take care. You will be taking care of some samsara. Like he will have million students, million sishyas. Okay, he is taking care of all the samsaras. Yeah, some sishya don't have to be very worried, and the guru will take care of it. So it's not possible. So, Atmana, Atmanam, Kuddare, you alone have to live. God can create a condition. God can give a condition. He can make an environment conducive. All that he can do, he can give the scriptures, he can give the guru, he can do all that. God can give you all those things. God's grace can act on all of them. So, for example, when you are thirsty, God has given you a beautiful pond, a beautiful source of water. He has given everything. But still, your thirst cannot be quenched by all that. You have to drink yourself. Unless you drink it yourself, your thirst cannot be quenched. So, even the omnipotent Lord cannot swallow that water for me to quench my thirst. Right? It is my thirst. Similarly, here also Krishna says, if you want liberation, if you want moksha, you have to get rid of samsara. Samsara has to be gone away. So, Atmana, Atmanam, Uddare. You have to lift yourself by yourself. You cannot wait for somebody to come with a tray. Why? He says, Atmaiva, Atmanaha, Bandhu. You alone are a friend to yourself, Bandhu. Here, Atma means yourself, one side. So, Atmaivan, Atmanaha, Bandhu. You alone are a friend to yourself. With respect to what? With respect to moksha. With respect to moksha, you are the only friend to yourself. You alone are a friend to yourself. And Atmaivan, Atmanaha, Tripuhu. You alone are an enemy to yourself also. You are the friend to yourself with respect to moksha. You are the enemy to yourself also with respect to moksha. That's what Krishna says. He emphasizes that the world is neither a friend nor an enemy. You are your friend and you are your enemy, not the world. Don't blame the world. Because I am not getting moksha, don't blame the world. Don't blame the world that the world is all enemy to you. You are your enemy. You are your friend, you are your enemy. So whether the world is friend or enemy depends on whom? On me alone. If I treat the world as my friend, it is a friend. If I treat the world as my enemy, it is an enemy. So it all depends on myself only. Actually, Krishna is going to explain this detail next sloka. Here he gives only the pratigya. That means what? He gives a statement which he will prove in the next sloka. Here, whatever he has told, Atmaiva, Atmana Bandhu, Atmana Ripuhu, that statement he is going to elaborate later. So you alone are an enemy to yourself, you alone are the friend to yourself. So he is emphasizing you alone, that nobody else is a friend or enemy. You are your friend, you are your enemy. The external people whom we consider as friends, Sankara tells actually very beautifully in the commentary here, there, like Putra, Patni, right? Pati, they are all our well-wishers. We consider them friends, right? He says, if they really create them, you get attached to them. Because of all those relationships, and because of that, what they do? They stop your spiritual practice. Because attachment grows more, spirituality becomes less. Right? You are getting more attached to these relationships, and because of this attachment to this relationship, your pursuit of spirituality. Because what?
Sannyasi.
Not just to become a sannyasi, your time with us is removed. That bondage, that attachment. Right? Your time with us is now taken away. I am scared of that. Because that dependency, that mutual attachment. See, that's why I always tell, we have to understand clearly the difference between love and attachment. Love is non-binding. Attachment is binding. You can love all your relationships. Absolutely, we should do that all the time. The more you get attached to them, that becomes binding. So here it is. People are frightened. Because it is attachment, they are frightened. If it is love, they won't be frightened. If it is attachment, they will be frightened that they may lose the person. Oh, he may become unexpected. You are getting all this dress. Forget it. Many ways can I take it? So I, that also, if I give at least white clothes, it's fine. I give all this yellow, red. Through that, I'm giving at least some barter. If I give without barter, so some, the person, they get frightened actually. So in that case, by creating an attachment, that becomes an obstacle for spiritual growth. The very so-called bandhus, what they have become now? They have become enemies to spiritual growth. Because attachment is developed more. For spiritual growth, you need detachment. You don't want attachment. You want love only. You don't want attachment. The more you get attached, then they become not, they are not your friends anymore. For spiritual growth, they are almost your enemies. Sangharacharya goes to that extent of, you know, defining it that way. So sometimes that person, but you know, on the other hand, I think somebody is a friend. This person deserts me sometimes. He became instantly an enemy. It can be a friend, it can be a lover, it could be anything, doesn't matter. Next moment what happens? All Vairagya comes. All Vedanta comes. The entire world is like that. People are always like that. They should never develop anything. That is why you should never develop attachment to anybody. All Vedanta comes, immediately goes to Gita class. They do all that. And suddenly some great thing comes. You know, normally you have got this Purana Vairagya and Smashana Vairagya. You know, somebody is dead. So they are now not taking his, you know, the head and they are taking to the cremation place, Ram Nam Satya, all that thing. So they will all look at that, life is like this. Ram Nam alone is Satya. You know, people will die. That Purana Vairagya, this is Purana Vairagya, Smashana Vairagya. He goes there, takes the bath and goes, the moment he gets out of the water, that's it. Oh, you know, that's the next problem, that is the problem I have to deal with, this is the problem I have to deal with. All life things will confront, immediately the death will be gone. Same thing with Purana Vairagya also, you go to some katha. And some, you know, somebody is giving some pravachan or something like that, he will tell all nityam, anityam, everything, all that thing, you know. You know, punarabhijananam, punarabhivaranam, all that he does. He listens to that, gets out of the room, oh, look at that. He goes to his wife and tells, you know, life is always like that. This is all. That is only for that few minutes. Again, all other problems come. This vairagyam is only that much because this person is not internally convinced yet about the real problems of samsara. That is the reason why people vacillate this way and that way. So, even though this person, for example, who was the best enemy, who was the best friend to Arjuna? Duryodhana. Not Yudhishthira, not Bhima, not Nakula, Nakasapaya. They were all his great friends and well-wishers. He had attachment to all of them. But Duryodhana was the guy who was his enemy. Arjuna Vishada came because of that. He came to the war and because of that Gita came. He became an enlightened person. So circumstances, sometimes they may look inimical, they may look undesirable, but they may lead us to a totally different, much spiritually evolved path. Right? That's all possible. So there is no, otherwise if Arjuna has not come here, there is no Sankhya Yoga, they have no Karma Yoga, they have no, none of those things are not there, right? Because he had Vishada, all these things came. So who is the friend and who is the enemy determines, it depends on how I look at it, right? So even an enemy can teach me a lesson in life if I am ready to learn. Okay. So a friend and enemy are, you know, and they are relative. They are not belonging to the external world at all. They belong to only me, how I look at them. So it all depends on one's fellow. So, but Krishna means here the Atma. The Atma word is used here. Actually, Atma Nabandhu, the one person, oneself. He does not mean the Satchidananda Atma here. It is only oneself or the person. See, Karyakarana Sangata, the physical and the subtle body. That's what he means here when he says Atma. And how you make your use of your body-mind complex, how you think, how you perceive, they alone help you, or they determine who is your friend, who is your enemy. You are your own friend. So that makes or mars one's life. So better turn to yourself and see what is your position than looking at the external world and then see who matters to me, who doesn't matter to me, who is my friend, who is not my friend. All that thing, they have no meaning at all. It all depends on how I perceive, how I look at the world and the people. So if you are inimical to yourself, you have to make it friendly. That's what you should. If you are inimical to yourself, you make it friendly. If you are friendly to yourself, what you should do? Don't make it inimical. You have to foster it further. You are already prevalent to yourself, first and further, don't make it. So it is something like, you know, Kathopanishad example. You know the chariot example in Kathopanishad, which I give all the time? None is the enemy. The chariot alone can be your friend. So none, you don't have to blame anything else, the chariot alone. A good car can take you to your destination, a bad car can take you to some other destination. So it all depends on what one makes up oneself. Just before we